Well, now that we have the tape recorder running, we should go around and just introduce ourselves. Because, Christy, I don't think you know very many people here, and some of us may have forgotten others. So, I'm Anita.
I'm Eric.
Lisa.
Susanna.
Jill.
Heath.
Paul.
Lex.
Anna.
Mom.
Christy.
Welcome. So for this talk, it's you know, that I have prepared, Eric Popson and I have both prepared some comments to make, but it's pretty open, so that if any of you would like to chime in or with a question or a comment, feel free to do so. As a part of our Kelche, most of you know, we alternate Tuesday nights of having Konan interviews with these talks. And we usually have a topic of focus for the whole 3 months. And this topic is Yogacara. And I have to confess, the first time I heard the word was not that long ago. And someone had asked me this question, so what do yoga and Zen have in common? And what's their common root? And I immediately said, oh, everything. And didn't know really anything further than that general outburst. And so I asked Santanim, and he said, oh, Yogacara. So then he immediately gave me the homework to do to do some reading and learn about what Yogacara was. And I've been doing that homework ever since, I think. But before I launch into it, I just want to raise a couple of big questions. And that is, one is, what is the nature of mind, of our mind, of mind? It seems to be a conundrum of a question that human beings have been grappling with as far back as our known history. And even in spite of all of our medical and scientific knowledge, this is a red-hot topic of study that everyone seems pretty convinced we haven't got too far into. And yet, around the 3rd and 4th century, when the Yogacara was written, there was this incredibly sophisticated and meticulous investigation of this topic. It's very, very interesting. The other thing, the other big question is, what is true reality? What is true reality? And maybe that question is really the cause of so much suffering, because everybody has a different idea. I don't know if this phrase is still popular these days, but when people, it seems like for a while, people were, when they were getting ready to have an argument, one person would say, this is my truth. I'm going to speak my truth. And there's something about that that is very interesting. What kind of truth is that? And what is your, you know, what is my truth? What does that mean? So, with that in mind, another thing about mind is, in talking about it, in Buddhist circles, there's been a lot of confusion about how to talk about it. And some texts that you'll read about mind, they'll capitalize one word, mind, and then they'll have lowercase mind. and then distinguish them. We, in our school, talk about don't know mind, or before thinking mind. And it can be confusing. In many of our koans, there'll be a question like, okay, there'll be a whole conundrum of events, and then this little old lady by the side of the road says, okay, with what kind of mind are you going to eat your dinner? And that thoroughly floors the traveling Zen master. But anyway, it is said that the whole universe is created by mind alone. Wow. What's that all about in this Avatamsaka Sutra? The whole universe is created by mind alone. In another sutra, the Buddha, I can't pronounce the name of the sutra. The translation is Jewel Heap Sutra. And I'm not sure what, but anyway, the Buddha is quoted as saying, I come as a dreamlike Buddha to dreamlike students, bringing a dreamlike teaching of the dreamlike Dharma. The whole universe is created by mind alone. The conception of the objects of our experience, interpreted to be existing externally to and independent of the consciousness perceiving them, is our fundamental ignorance of true reality and the cause of suffering. I had to read that because I couldn't remember that. But we'll, yeah. The conception of the object of our experience, interpreted to be existing externally and independent of the consciousness perceiving them, is our fundamental ignorance of true reality and the cause of so much suffering. So the subject, the perceiver, and the perceived, and the action of seeing. When all of these things get separated out, then everything is separated out and confused and suffering. So we have, I've been trying to think of what would be a good koan to sort of have as a reference point as we look through this study of Yogacara. And I finally settled on the very first, essentially the very first koan that we offer students. Let's see, I need a prop. No, I don't need a prop. It's the one with the stick. So this stick, this sound, we'll say this is a stick, and your mind, are they the same or different? So we separate all these things out, and confusion ensues. But when we attain just that, all becomes one and clear. But to say that is not it either. So Yogacara. Yogacara was rooted in the 3rd and 4th centuries. And it was based on the 3rd turning of the wheel. Would anyone like to offer up this brief categorization of the teachings of the Buddha? The first turning of the wheel, what was that?
Buddha?
I mean, to enlightenment under the Bodhi tree? And
well, it would be just after that. So his very first teaching that he offered.
Oh.
The Four Noble Truths.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the Four Noble Truths. So, suffering, the cause of suffering, 12-link chain of dependent origination, then letting go, the cessation of the 12-link chain, and then the Eightfold Path, the direction. The second turning of the wheel. In reading about this, it's kind of interesting just from a folk story aspect. It is said that when the Buddha offered the second turning of the wheel teaching, the bodhisattvas that were listening were okay with it. They kind of got through it, but all the arhats and the normal people, many of them had heart attacks and died when they heard it. They just couldn't deal with it. So that's the teaching of emptiness. Emptiness. It's kind of funny, but in another way, I can see that. I can see the challenge there. Yeah. So the third turning of the wheel is Buddha nature. It's understanding Buddha nature. So originally Yogacara was founded as a separate school by these two brothers, Sangha and his half-brother Vasubandhu. And what they did was it seems that the function of Yogacara at that time was to synthesize the teachings of the Buddha, because this is now quite a number of generations since he died. And as we know from any teaching, any traditions, that when the origination of the teaching, the originator of the teaching dies, then things develop and change in different ways. And so there was an attempt to synthesize all the different strands of teaching in this one sutra or study, Yogacara. This was drawing on various strands, largely on first and second century, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, it's called, well, translated as the Unraveling the Mystery of Thought Sutra. Maybe I'll try for the fun of it. Sandihinimokkhana.
Unraveling the Mystery of Thought.
Now we can have our talk for the
Unraveling the Tongue.
So, Yogacara, the word yoga, and this is something that probably many of you knew about before, but I hadn't really learned about it until I read about it. There are many different translations for that word itself. Union, method, effort, meditation. Meditation. Chara is simply, it means practice or doctrine. So yoga is a spiritual science centered on the practical application of the search for an experiential knowledge of true reality. So a central point, all reality is a display, and I would just hold that word for a minute, a display of consciousness, of appearances. An object and that same object in consciousness together constitutes a single fleeting entity. So back to our stick. I'm holding up the stick. and our consciousness of it, that sound, all together make one reality. As soon as we say, oh, that's a brown stick, then it's separating out. Or it might generate any number of ideas, opinions, feelings, and all of that is then separating out from that initial pure experience. The Mahayana schools in which Yogacara is founded teach that all is entirely empty. Another word that you might use that I tend to gravitate towards, all is entirely open. Open. Open.
Are you equating emptiness to openness?
Yes. Yes. Spaciousness. I think there's in the English language, it strikes me that there's a certain flavor to emptiness, the word emptiness, that holds some negation, some sense of void, and that is not what this is referring to. Yogacara explores the nature of appearances. This is on our Zen circle, appearances as what point on the Zen circle? For those of you who are into that.
90 degrees.
Appearances on the 360.
The
truth world just appearing. Explores the nature of appearances and sees them as real, mind only, but not the complete reality. The complete reality is when the circle, i.e. all ideas entirely, disappears. Pure nature, pure white nature, the signless ground before thinking mind, that which we cannot say appears. So, mind, object, event, all appear simultaneously. This is the flowering of our world, constantly flowering.
Our
world, our universe. Yeah. I don't have a... do you think you might pass me a clock? A watch or something. Oh, I can use air poking. Any questions so far, just about this general?
I wonder if you would repeat what you just said. Appearances are real, but they're not a complete reality. And then you
Think more. Yeah, yeah. So, objects, I'll find what I just said. Okay. So, Yogacara explores the nature of appearances and sees them as real. In other words, mind only, but not the complete reality. The complete reality is pure white nature, is what it's called.
White
nature. Before thinking mind, again, there are a number of sort of post-it notes that we ascribe to something that we can't ascribe anything to.
Yeah, so you were talking about objects and you said they were empty and then you said they were open.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, but you don't mean empty as in my milk bottle was empty.
Exactly.
And I was going to ask, empty in what sense?
In the sense of being open.
Like empty of a separate self, or how do you mean it?
That is very good. That's a very good way of putting it. Empty of finite characteristics.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, because yes, that's exactly what it's meant. Everything, and because the reason why is because there is absolutely nothing that we can hold on to. Everything is constantly in flux and flow and changing. And so when we grasp at appearances, it has no self-nature, is the way we talk about it.
It's funny, as you were saying that, I just remember in a retreat, I mean, last December or something, and I was sitting over here in the shadow, the sun was lighting a spot on the floor, and I literally watched it move. And it just, that to me, that equated to everything. Mm-hmm. Anything, just sitting here. We generally can't see the movement, but it's always...
You know, I've noticed that too during retreat, and one of the things that I love so much about retreat is we're slowing down enough that we can see something as subtle and straightforward as the sun, the sunlight going across the room, and we get it. Yeah, we get it.
So just like an analogy for what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
So, I want to go back to something more white. Like there's something white out there.
I wouldn't take that literally as a color concept.
Right.
Okay. But, poetry we're talking.
So there's something out there that we project onto in a sense and make form out of?
Project?
Or that we perceive and give it our own form? No.
So what is that pure white nature? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm talking about the process of our experience.
About experience, yeah.
You say what is mind or what is reality.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were trying to say that there isn't a definite reality because we project our own reality or we create our own reality. Not what's really out there, but there is something really out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that what mm-hmm. you're saying?
Yes, and that's a good way for me to get into a little bit of the territory of what is outlined in the Yogacara teaching. So far, this has just been a very broad stroke introduction. What is outlined in Yogacara are layers of consciousness.
Actually, can I jump in?
Please.
I think your question, if I understood it correctly, was something that really hit me like a lightning bolt a number of years ago, and it's that quote you started with from the Avatamsaka Sutra. When I started practicing and reading about Buddhist teachings, I came upon this line, you know, if you want to understand the Buddhas of the past, the present, and the future, you must realize the... I'm going to read this because it's... If you want to thoroughly understand all Buddhas of the past, the present, and the future, you should view the nature of the whole universe as being created by mind alone. And of course, it hit me like a lightning bolt. And my first question is, I mean, I was just floored by it. My first question is, what are they saying? Are they saying that there is, it is only my imagination, that you guys aren't even here? And these are some of the questions that the Yogacarans are really trying to dig into. Buddha pointed to mind as the source of suffering and understanding mind as the key to find liberation. So we have these practitioners through the centuries looking at mind, looking at karma. Before Buddha, everybody knew about karma, but everybody thought karma was created by physical action. Buddha said, no, karma actually comes from mind. This fundamental dukkha, if we want to get to the source of it, we have to look at this thing called mind. So as you were saying, everybody's saying, what is this thing called mind? So the Yogacharans actually tried to look very meticulously at what it was. And my feeling is, they're not saying that there's nothing out there, but what they're saying is that these layers of consciousness, which Anita Popesnian is going to talk about in a minute, transform our perception within the mind. So we think we are here, as you were saying, we think we are this separate object, and we are seeing another separate object that is out there. And according to Buddhist thought, that is an illusion. So what is really happening? What is really happening? And Yogacharas also think, they call mind the mind that transforms. So a lot of what Yogacara is doing is looking at how these different aspects of consciousness transform our perception. And this is what you were pointing at again earlier, which is two people can experience the exact same thing because of their conditioning, their belief systems, their personal karma. They can have incredibly different perceptions of what's going on. So all of this is digging into this question you began with. So we're not saying that there is no universe, but we're saying that we're seeing it from within all of our sense gates and our other layers of consciousness. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but...
Yeah,
that's
what I thought.
Yeah.
So, thank you. That was... I'll just read a little quote from the Master Sun Fan. Human consciousness is very, very meticulous. It is like a very high-class computer. Bugs, viruses, all these kinds of things. Or it can be clear.
Clear.
Yeah. So different, as I'll be saying, different layers of consciousness point to mental distinctions. A Buddhist, if you have it, a psychology of the mind. All eight consciousnesses are basically one, much as one electrical current with the flick of a switch turns on seven light bulbs. So layers of consciousness. I wish I could retain more in my head so that I didn't have to read it all, so forgive me for reading, but it's the best I can do in my 16th. The consciousness-only school describes the mind as a system of seven active consciousnesses which all develop out of the eighth. The eighth is known as the storehouse consciousness. The eighth consciousness is passive in the sense that it contains all the potentiality of the mind. It's often referred to metaphorically as seed. So the storehouse consciousness contains the seeds for the development and activity of the first seven consciousnesses. So the eighth consciousness, it is said, since beginningless time, has stored latent karma as seeds. the basis for all mental formations. These seeds, if we think about it, I don't know, growing up in the West, I didn't grow up in a Christian background, but I have heard that there is a sense that you grow up with some problem first. There's a, what is it, original?
Original sin.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. There's some kind of problem.
Being born.
Come on. I'm feeling a little red for coming up with that. But in Buddhism, the feeling is that we are, you know, the seeds are intrinsically pure, originally pure and clear. But by the watering of the seeds, we grow one thing or another, and we have this, often just to take a sidestep into this concept of karma, often we have the idea that we're kind of, you know, stamped package, done deal. We got, you know, the karma that we came in with, and that's that. That's our fate. But through this wisdom of storehouse consciousness and seeds, we can at any time refrain from watering seeds which are not clear, that cause harm, that create separation and, you know, exacerbate ignorance and delusion. For example, let's go back to our stick. Somebody who may have been hit by a stick as a child, and meeting this question, you know, this stick, your mind, and this sound, are they the same or different? Boom. Triggers all kinds of memories, all kinds of very difficult seeds. And there can be quite often a reactive response to that that cannot, you know, it's very difficult to break away from that karmic inheritance, those deeply rooted seeds that have caused so much suffering in the past. So through our practice, which is how long?
10,000.
Give or take. We tend this garden, if you will, this storehouse consciousness. Some we water and some we don't. Paying attention, paying attention, paying attention. We see what comes up and examine it for, you know, is this true reality? Is this something that's coming with a lot of baggage attached to it? Zen Master Sun San, he would talk about the storehouse consciousness with the image of a set of scales, a weight to measure, so that there is some kind of a practicing balance that we try to strike. In terms of balancing, you know, we have, I mean, I talk with my family all the time about good parking karma. and the word gets bandied about as freely as the word Zen does, but it's not, well, maybe you were already saying this, but it's not by so much by our actions. Well, it's about how we interact with the world can set in motion the cause and effect. And setting in motion cause and effect is growing seeds. Does that make sense?
I'm finding, I don't know if anyone else is, if you're talking to us, like all this psychology and philosophy classes I've had are coming in and I'm like associating everything you're saying, like the instead of original sin, you know, the noble savage of, you know, Rousseau and Jung and religion. And I'm having to not do that and hear what you're saying. Because there is a lot of parallels to other schools of thought around the world at different times.
That's something that I find very interesting, and you know, I'd like us to explore that. In fact, we'll probably break off pretty soon. But for the, you know, what we do for Kilche when we have these talks is we assign homework. If people are interested in exploring a topic in a certain way, then we can bring that then to our next discussion and have more to share and talk about. So one of those, there it is.
I don't know if we've gotten into enough for people to really follow the second two.
Oh, right, yeah.
But maybe just read the first one.
Well, the first one, the first homework question is to research or bring to the table some other models of consciousness. And some other models of consciousness, how are they similar or different from Yogacara? And Eric Hobsbawm thoughtfully wrote that down so that we can all remember and pass it out. I think I'll just talk a little bit more about the storehouse consciousness and probably end it there today because it's getting a little late already. In thinking about the patterns that we set up in the storehouse consciousness, I think we have to also be aware that it's not just us, that there's also familial karma, there's Seattle karma, there's American karma, different, there's just a million and one things. I don't know if anyone would want to offer any up, but there are just so many wider frames of storehouse consciousness in which we reside, DNA being the major one. There are a certain number of cards that were just dealt. Yeah.
Being in a human body, for one.
Yeah.
I mean, literally everything.
Yeah.
So, is the yoga karma saying that these eight levels of consciousness are seeds is true reality, or is that just, again, a creation of mind?
It's a model, it's a teaching tool basically to allow us to look into our own experience. It's kind of a map that's provided for us. And the purpose of Yogacara is actually to clarify our consciousness so we can transform it into wisdom. But the simple answer to that is it is a model. It's kind of a map of breaking down how consciousness functions by looking deeply at our own experience and seeing if we can get better insight of how it actually functions so we can clarify it and act freely.
So, but it's still...
Let me just add through before you, because there's something I want to add to what you said. Which is that there's a very simple and direct teaching in Zen. Not one, not two, one and two. And so what that is referring to is not emptiness, not all this shit that we got with storehouse consciousness and you know, the stuff that we, cards that we were dealt, but both those together. That is true reality.
That's true reality.
Yeah. Okay.
I just don't know how you can say we can't perceive true reality and create our own, but there is a true reality we can know. It seems contradictory. I mean, I'm fine with trying to perceive our own reality and what we create. But when you talk about achieving wisdom, is that not just another concept of mind that we created? I mean, is there any reality to wisdom? I think it's an important concept, but they seem to be going back and
forth between
reality and what's created.
Yeah, I don't think it's saying you can't perceive the truth. I think it's saying that there are ways our minds can get trapped in this teaching of separateness that's antithetical to what Buddha taught. So it's a way to see how we perpetuate our own karma through the way consciousness tends to function and how we can actually clarify that. So it's a pragmatic. I mean, we can practice with it.
I really appreciate you talking about the karma in terms of not just within that which I perceive as my individuality. And I, as you've been talking, I watch myself go from individual mind to cosmic mind to individual mind to cosmic mind in terms of it just seems like it's not just the individual system that they're talking about, that there's something inherent about consciousness, which is bigger than how it resides in me. And yet there is how it resides in me. So when you did the both and, I went, oh, that's it. It's just that, it's that back and forth, because, you know, I was thinking of the collective unconscious in terms of the storehouse stuff. It isn't just my karma or my family stuff. There's something about consciousness with, and so I'm sounding confused because it is kind of confused, but it's a both, it feels like a both and of something much, of just the nature of consciousness and then how that resides in my individual manifestation. So it's...
That doesn't sound confused at all.
No.
Any other observation? It's meaty stuff. I was doing some research for my next book and was reading Benjamin Franklin's almanac, Poor Richard's Almanac. If any of you have ever heard, you've all heard of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Poor Richard's Almanac. And I came upon this phrase that I thought suited this discussion beautifully. Lie down with dogs, get up with fleas. Karma. Zen Master Sun San said, good karma, oh, this is where I was going with the parking, I forgot. Good karma doesn't change karma, only clear mind changes karma. So often people ask the question, why, you know, I'm doing all these good things and I'm helping all the old ladies across the street every day and still I've got this trouble in my life. So this is missing the point of what the objective is. If we become clear, then helping an old lady who needs help across the street is lovely. Going to the store and getting in line to pay for your groceries like everybody else is lovely. If we are making in our mind, I am a good Samaritan, this is not the right direction. And we'll get into that. This is kind of stuck in the seventh layer of consciousness, the layer that separates out self from other. And we'll talk about that next time.
May I ask?
Yes.
Just to confirm, it's in Master Sung San that karma doesn't change karma. Karma doesn't change karma. Clear mind changes karma.
Good karma.
Good karma. Change good karma. Karma.
Good karma.
Yeah, as opposed to bad karma.
Thank you. I knew I was missing something there.
Being a literary sort or kind of a poet type, I'm going to offer up another image just to, I don't know, hopefully it won't be confusing people, but it's something that I read that resonated with me about understanding storehouse consciousness and karma. And that is to perhaps think of it not so much in terms of a house and where things are stored, as more like a flowing stream of all the appearances of... Let me read what I wrote, because I know I'm not going to sound very eloquent by myself. While the image of a storehouse is helpful, a truer image might be that of a raging torrent of karmic energy. That's what I'm saying. This energy is constantly moving through and shaping our lives and experience. Our results in thoughts and actions are then fed back into this karmic flow. The quality of the karmic flow is what makes each of us distinct beings, our unique selves. The flow of energy is constantly changing, but, like a river, it maintains an identity and consistency even through successive cycles of life and death. It is this aspect of fluidity, this lack of fixedness, that opens the possibility of transforming the content of the eighth consciousness. This is why karma, properly understood, is different from an unchanging or unavoidable destiny. So I think if there are any last comments? We'll leave it there. And then let me pass. Shall I pass?
Yeah, I don't know if the second or third ones.
So I think the first one is enough.
Yeah. Ignore the second and thirds. Well, maybe you want to ponder it, but...
Yeah. So we've written out the homework and consider the first one. But feel free to do what you like. Oh, also, I have some other handouts. If you are interested, this is Eric Hobson put together.